It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Summer on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Where's the dagger? I found the dagger. Lost the dagger. Ain't seen the dagger. Where's the dagger? Look for the dagger. Lost the dagger. Has anybody seen the dagger?
Well, Joanne is pushing the buttons today again. She's done an unbelievable job this week, and it didn't take her long to find Tiger Rag. Meow. Great job, Joanne. One of our favorites, usually reserved for John White. One of the famous moments in show history. Hours after John and Tracy had lost a cat of theirs. Casey inadvertently played this, and it has lived on forever in At the Races lore. Hammer, good morning.
Good morning. I didn't lose any cats, but it's always a cool song to hear. I didn't know that story. That's, you know, I guess it's funny now. I guess it wasn't funny at the time.
No, it wasn't. It was one of those things that you laughed anyway, even though it wasn't funny. It was impossible. And John appreciates it here. Years later, it's a great moment. Joanne pushing the buttons just for a week or so, and she's already found some of the classics. That's great. Good job.
She's doing great. She's got a great, cheery, welcoming voice, and yes, it's great to have her step in.
Well, I hope that that she and Casey and Jackson they can enjoy Easter weekend, and I'll get that in right away because I know at the top as we get to the top of noon it'll be a rush job. So one more time, a happy Easter and a good Pesach to everybody. One of the great confluences of in religion is always this this Good Friday, Passover, and Easter together.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. So it's nice to see some of the sporting events around, take the day off, and give everybody a chance to slow down a little bit and be with family and do what they got to do for the weekend. So, but things keep moving along out here. I wrote this down at the beginning of the week. I wanted to mention something about Davidowitz, Steve Davidowitz. And it's kind of crazy. We've been in the game or read about, a million books. I don't have Steve Davidowitz's book. Never had one, never read one. And I've just counted my books in the library, my little bookshelf library type thing. I probably have over 50 books on racing. Half of them on handicapping, half of them on, horse stories. And do not have a Davidowitz book, which is kind of odd. Yeah, is that strange? So Steve and I met at Monmouth Park sometime in the early 90s. He walked in, and he's Steve Davidowitz, and I'm like, okay, Buzz, who are you? Type of thing, because I didn't read his book. I didn't know who he was. And, he can come off a little gruff every once in a while, if you know Steve.
Go ahead.
And so I'm like, who's this guy? But ended up coming in. I think he was pushing a book or something. Yeah, you got to buy my book. You got to do this. I'm saying, get this guy out of here. Anyway, the long story short, we became, friendly. And I'm going to say sometime in around 94, 95, we had a Monmouth Park. Now, when they used to own the land across the street, they had a building over there called Wolf Hill, and it was a century-old building, kind of like a reading room type, where when people would come to town, you could stay there. One of the guys in the racing office, John Perlow, and his wife ran the place, and it was like a really cool old building up there, and actually we had our East Coast wedding reception up there. It was just a really neat place up on, and it was called Wolf Hills on the Hill. And when I was back there, I said, this would be a cool place to do a little handicapping show. So I ended up coming to this idea on Saturdays and Sundays. Why don't we have a small group up there, have some coffee and donuts and whatever? And I couldn't find, I was talking about it, and who am I going to get to go? So Davidowitz jumps up and says, I'll do it with you. I said, beautiful. So we did for about, it was very short-lived, maybe 10 to 12 weeks of handicapping on the hill. And we would have 30 to 40 people come up, and we'd just sit around in a very relaxed atmosphere and talk about the races that day. And I remember, listening to some of the stuff that he had with just his way of going about things and the way he broke down races. I'm thinking to myself, man, no, this guy's got some pretty cool stuff. So, we've been friends ever since after that, and we'd see each other sporadically at places. But he was, and then I went back and looked up his older stuff because people were talking about his books. I never really read one, which I probably will now, but I just found it amazing. I never had a book of his, but I could tell just by his way he did figures and the way he talked to people and was trying to educate him about the races that he was a big influence along the way. So I just wanted to throw that in. I guess anybody through the years has met him at some point and we got along fine, and I enjoyed his company when I did see him.
Well, I appreciate it. You've never told that story. That's great.
Well, I had forgotten about it, to tell you the truth. We were going through some stuff here when I moved out of Santa Anita, brought my stuff home, kind of organizing. I found a little card, a little ticket, handicapping on the hill. It's pretty wild, because I remember Pete Verdi, who was the marketer, go, yeah, do whatever you want. Here you go. Just do it. Didn't think we were going to do it. And the people that came actually got a little tour of the house. And, it was just this very, that house was very underutilized. And then, at some point the state sold the land. I think it was a library for a while, and I may be wrong, but I think if the houses might not even be there anymore. I'm very sad if that's the case. I forget, but anyway, you can just, one of those throwback houses where you can imagine, 50, 60 years ago coming and staying up there. But no, we'd put, when trainers would come to town and, hey, we'd say, hey, can I stay up at Wolf Hill? And so we put them up there, and it was always a special treat for them. So, anyway, wanted to get that story out of the way. a little slow weekend. It's actually a pretty slow weekend in general as we get ready to go 2 weeks away to the Derby. Slower than normal again out here, horse-wise. The weekend cards are not stellar, shall we say, again. Still adjusting to the turmoil that's going on here. Settled down a little bit. I think a lot of uncertainty still going on. Some trainers talking about taking horses here and taking horses there. So it hasn't settled down to the point of, or certainty. It's still a lot of questions in people's mind what's going on in the head there. CHRB meeting yesterday, I started listening to some of it, and the first half was filled with, these activists, PETA-like group representatives going up and, ranting in the public forum portion of the meeting. And after I heard about 10 of those people, I just turned it off. So I don't know what happened the rest of the meeting, but it's very unsettling. That's all I can say. So I'm glad that we have the Derby to look ahead to in two short weeks, and still contemplating making a little run out there. If I can get my stuff done here, we might meet up again in Louisville. But as everyone's talking about, what's kind of missing is the Oaks. There's not a whole lot of Oaks stock out there.
No.
Right?
Right. No, you're right.
And I printed those PPs out the other day, and I'm, looking up and down. I mean, it's not a very, quote, exciting Oaks, if you want to call it, right now. I'm sure it'll build up a little bit. You got Bellafina, who not only leads the field in points, but, has done a workmanlike job, shall we say, getting ready. She has to be the obvious favorite right now. Going to mile and eighth, and things will change. But there's plenty of fillies in there. Then there's a lot of trainers in there that have won the Oaks before. They know what to do. You got Larry Jones back on the scene, who's won, I think, three Oaks. He's got Street Band. You got Dallas Stewart, who's won an Oaks or two in there with that Out for a Spin, who, shocked the world at 50-1, and all of a sudden doesn't look too bad. You're not going to get 50-1 in the Oaks. Lady Apple, Asmussen. So a lot of Todd Fletcher's got Always Shopping in there. So I think this horse is going to be a little more contentious than it looks like on paper right now with Bellafina the standout. But, she made a 1-4 rated Churchill Downs for the Breeders' Cup and didn't run that well. So there's a little chink right there, but I'm sure you'll hear more when you get out there, but it just kind of looked like, sounded like the Oaks had been left behind a little bit this year, because we don't really have there's no rivalry. There's been so much concentration on the Derby with all the movement going on. And speaking of that, so I did a little, because there wasn't a whole lot going here, I did a little look up to see, with the Mike Smith decision and who we're going to ride in the Derby and that. So I want to look back and see when the last time the Derby, the rider of the Derby winner did not ride in the prep race and what happened there. So I went back 10 years, and in those 10 years, some nice, you got Justify, Always Dreaming, Night Quest, American Feral, California Chrome, Orb, I'll Have Another, Animal Kingdom, Super Saver, and Mind That Bird, the last 10 Derby winners. And of those 10, three were ridden by a different horse, a different rider that won the prep. You got Orb, who obviously was Merzeri was on him in the Derby. Johnny Velasquez rode him in the Florida Derby in his final prep, ended up taking off and riding Verrazano for Todd. So there was one. And then you got Animal Kingdom, who came out of the Spiral. That's what that race was called at the time. Alan Garcia rode him there, and Johnny Velasquez rode him in the Derby. And then Mind That Bird, of course, comes out of the Sunland Derby, where the old Casey Lambert rode him in the Sunland Derby, didn't finish fourth, and then, of course, Calvin Burrell came back and won the Derby. So three times that's happened, not that often, but it does happen. And while doing this, I found in one other interesting, statistic. So of those 10 horses I mentioned, besides Justify and American Fair, who obviously went on to win the Triple Crown, only one more of those three, of those other seven horses, went on to finish in the money in all three of the breeder Triple Crown races, the Preakness and the Belmont following the Derby, obviously. And oddly enough, Mind That Bird, he finished first in the Derby, second in the Preakness, and third in the Belmont. And sound that odd out of those, you know, those nice horses that we that I'd mentioned, that he's the only one besides the Triple Crown winners out of the last 10 that finished in the money in all three Triple Crown races. So there you go. That's what I've been busy doing, looking up crazy stuff like that.
You know, the funny thing with Mind That Bird that doesn't get brought up enough, if Rachel Alexandra doesn't, if Jess Jackson doesn't buy her and throw her into the mix and run her in the Preakness, Mind That Bird goes to New York with a chance at the Triple Crown. And if that had happened and had Calvin ridden the way he did, you know, where he didn't get a, he chose not to ride at Belmont earlier in the day or leading in, that'd be one of the great, that'd be one of the great controversies in Triple Crown history. You know, of course, it would have been different. You know, leading in there, you know, yeah, he might very well have taken a mount, so he had a chance to, you know, get a feel for Belmont. But that's a story that hasn't been written enough.
No, and interestingly enough, as you know, Borrell rode Mind That Bird in the Derby. They took off,
right,
and took off and rode Rachel in the, in the Preakness, and ended up, you know, throwing this Mike Smith stuff in there. Mike Smith ended up riding Mind That Bird in the Preakness when he finished second to Rachel Alexandra. And then, of course, Borrell jumped back on and ran third to Summer Bird in the Belmont. And so there's a lot of stuff that goes on, and Jay touched on it, how certain riders just kind of happen to end up on certain things. Now, I've got one more little crazy jock story here. This is how much I was going off looking at stuff. So bear with me here. So sit back, close your eyes, and imagine this stuff. So 1995 Kentucky Derby, won by Thunder Gulch. We all know Gary Stevens was in the saddle for Thunder Gulch. But let's see how this whole thing transpires. Pretty wild. So Mike Smith rode Thunder Gulch in the Florida Derby, and Thunder Gulch won the Florida Derby. Now, this was back in the 90s when the Florida Derby, when Gulfstream had those winter dates, and the Gulfstream meet, the short Gulfstream meet ran from around the first of the year through mid-March, and then it went to Hialeah. So the Gulfstream, the Florida Derby was run in mid-March, kind of towards the end. It was like the culmination of that meet. Big, huge day. It was always a big day. So it was a prep for a prep. It like today, it wasn't the final prep. So Mike Smith rides Thunder Gulch, wins the Florida Derby. Everything's going great. Then Thunder Gulch goes to the Bluegrass. And oddly enough, Mike Smith decides to go to Oakland that day and ride Concern against Cigar in the Oakland Handicap. So Pat Day ends up taking over for Thunder Gulch in the Bluegrass, and he runs a clunker, runs fourth, and we move on from there. So Mike Smith ends up riding Talking Man in the Derby for Roger Adson. Now, Talking Man, Mike Smith rode Talking Man in the Gotham, which was the prep for the Wood. He won by a ton. So he ends up taking off Talking Man, and Shane Sellers rides Talking Man in the Wood and goes ahead and wins by 10. So he must have already had Talking Man lined up, which is really wild. So come Derby time, Pat Day ends up riding Timber Country instead of Thunder Gulch for Lucas, and it ends up running third. So Shane Sellers, bear with me, so Shane Sellers, who rode Talking Man in the Wood, ends up riding a horse called Lake George, which is a forgotten horse. But Lake George came out of the Santa Anita Derby, and the reason I mention that, Lake George came out of the Santa Anita Derby that year, who was won by Larry the Legend, who was ridden by Gary Stevens, who Larry the Legend ends up getting hurt. Who comes open? Gary Stevens ends up on Thunder Gulch and wins the Derby on Thunder Gulch. So there's tons of these little stories, and as you said, sometimes you just make way too much of these changes. Oh, my gosh, he did this, he did this, he did this. Everyone's trying to do the best they can, ride the best horse they can. And so don't take a whole lot in it. Mike Smith had a choice. He went with the horse he thought was best. Thank you very much. Move on. Don't let it get in your way too much of handicapping these things. These are all good riders. These are all good horses, right?
Well, yeah, and the concept that there's some animosities that'll generate out of this, and that it's just ridiculous. It's a unique circumstance, and Baffert isn't going to make decisions going forward that is going to limit. People might forget that Roadster, he was on Roadster at the beginning, and basically Baffert portioned out the horses to, almost, six different riders between Rosario and Game Winner, and DVD had Improbable, and Talibo had Mucho Gusto, I think. Pratt had Mucho Gusto, whatever. The horses were evenly distributed. All the good two-year-olds and the later developing ones had specific riders assigned to them to try to avoid this kind of thing. And, I mean, it's just
it's a
silly argument.
It's a total silly. You don't think that next year if something comes on, he's not Baffert's not going to call, hey, Mike, you're not riding for me. You screwed me last year.
Exactly.
Doesn't come into it. Which shows you, just the uniqueness of horse racing compared to other sports. I mean, you think about it. I mean, all the players or the horses, I mean, they all use the same practice field every day. They all go back to the same, backside. All the trainers see each other all day. The jockeys ride 9 different races a day for different people, go back into the same locker room. It's really just a really unique dynamic. So it's amazing there aren't more, fights, whether verbally or physically, that go on because of the competitiveness, and then every 30 minutes you got to put on a new face and go ride for the guy that you just rode against, and so there can't be too much animosity going on, or the sport wouldn't survive. So this is just on a bigger scale, and unless there were promises made that were broken, these guys just move along and go on to the next day. I mean, when you get up to this level, Bob's going to do the same thing. He's going to go after the best rider he can. And so he understands when Mike decides to go another way. So it's just business as usual, really.
Hammer, quick note on the racing out last weekend. Things, of course, pick up today. I thought it was notable, and I haven't had a chance to really discuss it other than in passing. Very good move by John Sadler to take Woodford Thoroughbred's Campaign, who did seem to have a little bit of a look in the big cap if there had been some pace battle that he might have come running. Instead, he had to settle for fourth, beaten 5 lengths, but he brought him right back a week later here in the Tokyo City Cup on Sunday, and Campaign, a grade 3 win. I thought the Curlin colt.
Well, I wasn't there, but I'm thinking he got a phone call. And the race was a little light, was kind of said, hey, at least go in there, check it out. But you see this often enough. Barry Abrams was one who pointed this out to me, that and he would run horses back, and his theory was, and it's proved true many times, if you run a horse rather quickly back, if you run that horse maybe 3 times in 20-21 days, the third race, the second would get better, then the third race was always the best of them all. And when you take a long-distance horse like that, they're running, he went 1.25 miles and then came back, 8 days later and ran a mile and a half. They just get going. It's demanding distance-wise, but it's not as demanding speed-wise because they're going slower all the way around. And so, hey, they like to run long. Those horses like to run in general. So it didn't see it totally out of line, but it was actually very cool. I'm glad when that happens every once in a while and pointed out that, hey, you don't necessarily need to wait 5-6 weeks between races, especially when you have a horse that's, maybe on top of his game. I mean, he pointed him for the big cap, so obviously he had him in pretty good shape. So why not, when they get to that good shape, why not keep him there? Why not run him back quicker? That always... always one of the mysteries to me, as we always talk about the, you know, the Breeders' Cup. We get them all primed for the Breeders' Cup. You know, you spend 2-3 months getting to the top condition in November, and then they run the Breeders' Cup, and you don't see them again for 3-4 months. And, you know, many times they don't come back as good. I was just always just was amazed about that stuff. Yeah, a little weak on the weekend card here. There's a sprint, the Kona Gold, that drew 5 horses, and maybe it got screwed up because of the schedule. The last sprint, the San Carlos at 7 furlongs, was run on the end of March, March 30th. So we're literally 3 weeks away, which is a little bit close for a sprint. But that San Carlos was one that was slated to run earlier in March, on the same day as the Sandy to Handicap, I believe. So March 10th or so. And then when they had the 3-day blackout, shall we call it, when they didn't run, they rescheduled it. So they rescheduled it here. And 3 of the horses from that race are coming back, and a couple other ones. But this is kind of an ugly group here for a California sprint. There's absolutely no speed in any of these horses. You've got another. Speaking of John Sather, I guarantee you got a phone call about this race as well. He's running Sistron in there, who the last 10-12 races on the page here are sprints, which is great, but they're all on the turf. He does have one win going on the dirt. I mean, if he transfers his speed over to the back to the dirt again, he could be long gone, because there literally is no speed in here. Dr. Dorr comes back. I thought he would. We liked him last week. I thought the 7/8 would hit him, but he's just kind of been flat. Trying to figure him out, whether he's gone from 1.25 miles to 1.16 miles to 7/8. And he does have a win at 6.5 early in his career, but just trying to figure him out. I mean, I guess he's the choice. He's stuck on the rail. I'm not sure. If there's a sequence in here, this is an all-button race for me, for sure. Oh, you got Cantanky in there, 2-1, and this horse really gets out of the gate slow. Not really a win machine. A crazy race. I can't figure it out, and I'm thinking maybe the turf horse. Sistron can get out of there and go, but this is a real tough race to figure out what's going to happen on, and there is no stake on Sunday, so just trying to. It sounds to me here the feeling is just want to get through the meet here another couple months, and you know, and regroup and come back in the fall and in one piece. But you know, it seems like there's some trainers trickling out of town, and with the absence of the down the hill. Here, at least through the end of April, they're waiting. They've moved a couple of the races over to 5/8 on the turf, but you got to be careful that because you run that where that starting gate is, and you start running too many of those, it gets dug up at a crucial point as the horses start turning into the backstretch. So there's some things to still work out here. It seems to have gone a little bit smoother, but there's still a lot of things to be ironed out here before it gets back to normal.
No doubt. And that meeting yesterday, the CHRB meeting, was apparently a bit of a three-ring circus from every report. And you know, one of the things that's occurring now is that you're having mainstream type press coverage of those meetings, and I see that there's a CNN piece that came out, which I scanned. It looks like the guy kind of understood some of the ins and outs. But every time you get somebody that really doesn't understand what they're hearing being discussed. So luckily, the quotes from Madeline Auerbach and Chuck Winter are verbatim, so at least you can get a sense that the responses were delivered with an intelligent perspective from actual horse people that could answer some of the silliness that was floated apparently at yesterday's get together. So I'm sure.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Yeah,
I. You know, California is the as far as I know, the only state they have the meetings. Obviously, they're public events, and that's great. So you can show up. But then they still they broadcast it over the internet, which I never understood that. Yeah, make them public. If you want to come, fine. But, you know, you don't need to share your dirty laundry with everybody around the country, as far as I'm concerned. I don't know why they offer that feature where you can listen in, because it's like a soap opera at some points. You know, it's 9:30, I get the call yesterday. It's 9:30, you got to listen. And it's like, oh, geez. So of course, I turned it on for a little bit, but, you know, it's on the radio start. Okay, it started. Did you hear that? And, you know, if you want to go. But I was there at the meeting before, excuse me, and I picture where the cameras are. It's like a little ballroom thing. It's actually the room where we draw the post positions for the Breeders' Cup. So up in that right. little area. And, you know, in the back, they're lined up. There's, you know, six cameras, CBS, NBC, Fox, this, whatever. And it's like, and you're going, are you kidding me? Is there nothing else going on in the world that you got to be here? And so they don't know. They just take snippets, deliver it to their, you know, their editor or whatever. And, you know, you never know what's going to show up. And sure enough, you know, on the ride down, going, taking a little drive yesterday, KNX leaves right off with stuff. And if you listen to 10 broadcasts, there are 10 different stories that are coming out of them, and 9 of them are totally off base. But that's, you know, that's our media here today, and just hopefully it'll die down a little bit, and I can get back to normal if that is ever possible. To tell you the truth, around here, it's a weird feeling.
Hammer, I appreciate it, and we'll check in next week, and ideally we get you to join us at Churchill for Derby Week.
Yeah, we're working on it. So that sounds like a plan here, and always great to talk to you and everybody, and enjoy the weekend, and thanks for having us.
Not at all. Rick Hammerly, everybody, away they go, and away we go into our final half hour. We're going to stay right here, James Scully standing by, and we may have to bring James and Ed in separately. We're also on the lookout for Marcus Hirsch to do a little of the Charlestown report. In the meantime, though, we'll say thanks on behalf of players that caught James last week, like the Ian Wilkes player, Bourbon Resolution for the Commonwealth or the Ben Ally, and as a result, got a big price. Nice return on Saturday mid card, James. Well done.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, the great ride by the jockey, Tyler Gaffleone, really went to riding on him on the far turn. And, you know, he responded to it. He rode him all the way hard to the wire, you know, I mean, just basically with his hands and just, you know, pushing him along. And, it was a strong performance. Being drawn outside was terrible in that spot. The track really played, I thought. So the main track there, Keeneland, played so inside a little bit in the first week. But by, you know, here of late, it's been more fair.
Well, we have got a variety of things to look at. I don't know, what your preference is, but before we talk about plays for Friday and into the weekend, let's get the Kentucky Derby report with the prep season wrapped up.
Yeah, definitely. The Arkansas Derby concluded the prep season, and Omaha Beach, you know, ran a big race. I was really amazed that, you know, he broke alertly from the starting gate, but four horses to his outside crossed over, you know, in front of him, and Mike Smith angled him out. But to be fifth in the early going, that was really a sharp burst of turn of foot he offered, to circle five wide on the first turn and be in front by the start of the backstretch. And then he really was taken in hand by Smith, settled nicely. I thought both the Arkansas Derby and the Rebel, second division of the Rebel, had one thing in common. And if you watch the replays of those races, when Omaha Beach gets to the far turn, you can see Smith, like, you know, nudge him with his hands, you know, ask him to go. And he widens on the competition in both races going into that turn, puts a little separation in there. And he's going to be looking to do the exact same thing in the Kentucky Derby. Omaha Beach is going to be forward from the start, and you know, might not be in the lead, but it'll either be second or third and up close. And, you know, in both races, he had quality rivals, Game Winner and Improbable, Juvenile Grade 1 winners. They took a run at him, couldn't get by him. I really thought he had improbable measured all the way through the stretch and really, you know, finished the well. I love the fact that he earned triple-digit late pace, percent late pace numbers.
Well, and as you know, as you look at those kinds of figures, in fact, take a second to touch on, you know, who stands out right now when you look at this field, James. I mean, the things we're going to start talking about, albeit Churchill starting Monday, we're going to start to, you know, figure out the pace scenario. We've already hinted at some things early. What is this field saying to you when you look at some of the Briz statistics, whether it's the late pace and the prime power, and what are some of the key elements that you'll utilize when you put a final thoughts together?
Well, yeah, definitely. The, you know, I love using the burst speed and late pace numbers, and you know, I'll do a lot of I'll watch a lot of replays as well. And the one characteristic of this year's field, I mean, the top last race speed rating in the field is a Tacitus with 103, and more than like 10 runners in here are within 3 or 4 points of that. So there's not a lot of separation. You know, by comparison, Justify earned a 114 speed rating in last year's Santa Anita Derby. So the numbers aren't as high this year, but we also have a lot of lightly raced horses that have, you know, the potential to jump up and run a huge figure in upcoming races. And it makes for an exciting race. I think there's going to be, I don't know how low the favorite, likely Omaha Beach, will be in the betting. I mean, I think 9-2, 5-1 is pretty realistic. But I just think there's going to be a little separation between Omaha Beach, Game Winner, and Roadster from Bob Baffert's stable, and Tacitus. I think they're going to be the top four betting choices. There'll be a little bit of a gap back to the rest, and you have a whole bunch of dangerous secondary win contenders in that mix.
Well, we'll build tickets and build plays when we are together leading into Oaks and Derby Day. I'll ask you the same question I asked Nick Tamaro. What's your read on the two-day, $2 pick six concept tying all the grade ones Friday and Saturday?
Oh, I love it. I mean, that's the kind of thing that I'll be paying close attention to those races anyway. And, you know, would love to have a couple of strong opinions that I could build a ticket around. You know, like he, you know, I'm sure you guys talked about it. It's a low takeout. I think it, you know, has a chance to be popular, and, you know, it will be an attractive wager on the sixth grade one stakes.
Who had that concept, you know, bubble to the surface, if you know?
I don't know. I mean, I'll ask Darren and KK, and even, you know, even Gary Palmisano might have had something to do with that, but I don't know yet, Steve.
And I'm also curious what they, I didn't think I saw in the release, is there a guarantee?
I'm not aware of that yet.
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think there is, but I'm curious what they expect. I was immediately intrigued by it, and I think it'll be. I agree with you. I think it'll get some.
I'll just say this: one thing Hammer had been talking about was, you know, he's talking about jockeys and how they make selections and stuff like that. And you know, a lot of people, you know, will bring up the last jock really to pick wrong was John Blasquez with Orban Verrazano, but I do think he was a little bit, I can understand his choice. I think this went into the decision with Mike Smith, where Omaha Beach is going to be forwardly placed. There's a potential for a soft pace. He could have a better trip. And I think he was thinking the same thing in 2013 with Verrazano, who was coming off, you know, front-running performances in the woods and down in Florida. And he was actually second after the half-mile point. The only problem was his stablemate basically killed his chances by going out there and whipping through 45-1 and 109-4 early fractions, Palace Malice, first-time blinkers. And, you know, you can just contrast that to 2 years earlier when Shackelford went 48-3 and 113-2 on a short lead. I mean, it was more than 15 lengths faster. Both races didn't appear to have a ton of speed on paper, but one, they went extremely fast. The other, they went extremely slow.
Well, these are the issues that we're going to grapple with. And a lot of this, of course, the next layer will be added a week from Tuesday when we have the draw. And we'll see if there's going to be concentrations of, you know, pace types and pressers, where they line up. And as a result, that could either enhance or detract from a potential, you know,
right. And
fast-ish
and along
pace.
Those lines, absolutely. And along those lines, I really think Vekoma is going to be key for these off-the-pace types. I mean, just analyzing the brisk early pace ratings in these prep races, he got a 105 and a 113, E1 and E2 in the bluegrass. That's the fastest, you know, in the field. And, you know, Javi Castellano could really just try to send him and, you know, try to steal the race on the front end, or he could try to sit, you know, real close in second like he did in the bluegrass. I thought he sort of floated Vekoma out into that first turn and allowed someone like Hop Around to come up there and set the pace.
Well, and this is where a draw for particularly Omaha Beach is going to be really notable, because if he ends up drawing down inside, that'll force Smith's hand to a certain degree to at least be hard used to gain early position, if not even potentially a pace setter. You know, if a horse like him draws, let's say, from, you know, near the auxiliary gate, anywhere probably from 8 to 16, it would be ideal, so that he could set up that stalking position so that Smith can then evaluate the pace and make, you know, the move that's appropriate. But if a horse like Omaha Beach draws down inside, that could actually add to the early pace prompting. I mean, we always say people are constantly looking at these fields these days without, you know, the post-point era, and saying, you know, without the sprinters stretching out, we've lost that element. But invariably, you know, you're going to get enough horses that are going to be looking for early position to prompt the pace enough to keep it at least, you know, somewhat honest. It's almost impossible to get, you know, a dawdling pace these days.
Right, yeah, and definitely. And I even think, you know, the service came out and he was like hitting that, like maximum security could like be up there sitting up there, like, you know, sitting second or third or even like, yep, fifth or something. And that's just almost like playing possum. I mean, you know, you might say that and then you might be thinking, hey, we got to try to go and steal it like War Emblem or somebody.
Well, he has a bit of a War Emblem feel to him. That's the horse that I you know, that I referenced immediately after Florida Derby, and said that, you know, that's exactly the you know, the comparison that you're looking for. It's funny that you bring him up too. Now, we will know more as we move toward the draw. That's going to be a mammoth. I mean, it's always important, but it's going to be particularly key. And we'll see if there's any changes between now and draw day. James, let's turn our attention to the weekend, and we'll save the last minute Friday play for the last minute. But what do you like this weekend?
Well, the feature, you know, at Keeneland tomorrow is the Elkhorn Stakes. And I really think that, you know, Zulu Alpha is going to be obviously tough in there. He's run well at Keeneland. But this race has some pace in it, it looks like to me, Steve. And I think Bigger Picture really got on track a little bit late last time. He's going to get a better setup tomorrow, potentially. I mean, I like him in that spot for Maker. I mean, obviously Maker has a bunch of top contenders in there, but Bigger Picture's run second and two-thirds from three attempts at Keeneland. He's run well over the turf, and he can handle some turf with Gib to it as well.
All right, a little Bigger Picture. What else we got?
Well, I did take a look at the race at Charlestown, the Charlestown Classic, and I'll tell you, last year, Diamond King, I thought, you know, obviously, you know, wasn't ready for the Preakness, didn't run well there, didn't run well in the Ohio Derby. But he came back with two pretty solid efforts in the late summer in that Smarty Jones and the Oklahoma Derby, and then all of a sudden was off for 6 months. And I really liked his return at Gulfstream 3 weeks ago. Really, I thought, looks like he's like developed as a four-year-old, made good progress. He's got a career best burst speed rating. And I just think he's going to get the trip there. He's either going to be, you know, showing the way or sitting close with Javi Castellano. I look for him to run a big race, or John Service. So I like Diamond King in that Charlestown Classic.
Yeah, he caught my eye too. And Castellano looking for his fourth Charlestown
Classic. Oh, yeah. And Castellano had a great meet at Keeneland, and he's really riding well now.
Yeah, he is. All right.
The other race I'm really looking forward to. I still got to do some more handicapping for tomorrow, but am intrigued by the Federico Tessio. You know, that race sets up as a Preakness prep for Always Mining. He's 1-5 on the morning line. But I'll tell you, you know, the one thing that's like he hasn't had to run that fast in the early stages, but just watching his last couple races in that private terms in Miracle Wood, he promises to add big time to the Preakness pace. I mean, he is quick from the gate. He springs it, you know, on the fly, this gelding, you know, Stay Thirsty gelding. And after running 10 races at one turn, I mean, he looked great last time. So really excited just to see him run, because he's going to have the potential to impact the Preakness the way that race develops.
Well, and since you bring it up, and I don't think we're going to get a chance to do much more on the Laurel sequence, but, you know, we talked to Alan Foreman to start the show, and the match series races start the stake sequence with the 5th, 3:12 Eastern, and you got 8 of them going in the Frank Whiteley, including the Terra Nova's very hot Killy Beggs Captain. But this is a nice group. Damon De La Dovico has got Lackey in here. Mr. Brick shows up. Carlos Gonzalez. How about Lewis Field for Jeff Runco? This is a very nice group. And then the Leatherberry, you've got a 14-horse field. The one MTO, Linda Rice put Pavaro in as an MTO in case the rains hit and there is potential, but ideally it stays on. That's got all the usual turf sprinting suspects in it. The King Leatherberry, 3:42 Eastern. Then the Prima Netta. This is the fillies and mares going 6 on the dirt. And you mentioned Service earlier. He's got Ms. Locust Point back in this spot. But Carrie N., the nice Graham Motion sprinter, and Shimmering Aspen, Rodney Jenkins. She's got to be getting the little – she's got to be – how old is she now?
Who's that?
Shimmering Aspen. Just 5. She's 7-14, though. She ran in the Fritchie and never really reached contention. She kind of was back behind the pace. But Shimmering Aspen, the Hillwood,
Malibu coming off two races against Late Night Powwow too.
I like Shimmering Aspen as a mare. That's a good group. And then the Dahlia is the 4th of the. Of the match series races, and you got fillies and mares going a mile, ideally on the grass, and hopefully it doesn't get affected. The La Moneda for Tom Morley comes in, and you got Viva Vegas for Nacho Correas down inside, and then comes the Weber City Miss. That's the Black Eyed Susan prep, where La Setas is going to be a heavy favorite, and as you mentioned, the Tessio, and actually the Clark closes out the stakes sequence, the boys going long on the turf. So a very nice stakes card highlighted by the match races and the Preakness Black Eyed Susan advance.
Yeah, and Always Mining, you know, that's a horse people check in to see, but that's actually the only, you know, race that isn't a good betting race. I mean, those fields are huge. Definitely worth checking out Laurel's card tomorrow.
And what else? How about the...
And yeah, I got one more play for you today. Yep. In the 4th race at Keeneland, number 10, Gold Zephyr. Liked that effort last time on an off track. Showed an affinity for it. Ron Moquette, Philly. I don't know if that 10-1 price is going to hold because some AE scratched out of there. But I look for her to graduate today under Joel Rosario. Gold Zephyr, number 10 in race 4.
The 10, Gold Zephyr, and you get Joelle and Moquette our man Ron, who we had fun with last week at Oaklawn. Excellent. James, I appreciate it. Best of luck, and I will see you, obviously, and Ed at Churchill next week.
Yeah, we start the Kentucky Derby Work Show Monday morning, and we'll be there. See you when you get on the ground, Steve.
Well, I'll be there tomorrow, so we will
All right, I'll see you Monday morning.
Before then, exactly.
All righty.
James Scully, everybody, and your last-minute push, which has become a favorite, a fan favorite, Gold Zephyr. Let's take the last break of the morning, and we'll wrap up the last show before we head to Kentucky. Weekend preview at the races, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet, and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from EchoBase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, just about 6-7 minutes to close out the weekend preview. And of course, we shift into full-time Derby preview mode, Derby Oaks preview mode, starting Monday from Churchill Downs. Marcus Hirsch joining us, and Marcus covering the Charlestown Classic and all the undercard activity, which includes, you know, a couple more 100 granders. You got the Dance to Bristol and the Robert Hilton Memorial, and then a bunch of 50s, and also the Russell Road, terrific local player for many years, him and researcher. Marcus, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent, Marcus. And this race, you know, $1 million, and I mean, not to take away from the concept, but wouldn't you get the same field for $500?
Yeah, I think you would. Maybe not. I mean, maybe not Mongolian Groom. I think it was the big money that lured him out there. But obviously something comparable. It's a little bit of overkill. There's no question. I don't know enough about the jurisdiction and their motivations and their you know, resource allocation principles to comment on it at all, but it does just a lot of money for these horses, that's for sure. Yeah.
And it makes for, listen, it's a big day. I've been there, and they get a nice crowd. It's fun because the big name riders come to town a lot of times for it. And, you know, Castellano's made it his personal piggy bank this race. He's looking for his fourth classic check.
I think he has many piggy banks, Steve. He has a warehouse of piggy banks.
I love it. Well, it would certainly be a nice payday for a number of others, including Kendrick Carmouche, War Story, Edgar Prado, looking to repeat with Something Awesome. Going to be a little bit of a price. You've got Johnny V with Paul Pompa's Rally Cry, who looks very interesting in here. And you mentioned the West Coast Invasion with the Mongolian Horde, Mongolian Groom, and Giovanni Franco, the big opportunity for him, actually.
Well, that horse ran, he was getting weight, and he was well-beaten, but he ran a good race in the San Diego Handicap. He's an okay horse. I don't like him at all in this race. He's back 2 weeks, cross-country ship, and it's not easy to get there. The trainer himself said the horse didn't eat for 2 days, basically, after he arrived. He's doing better now, and he trained yesterday, and he's fine to run, but it was always going to be a big ask. Don't like him. You mentioned Prado and last year's winner, Something Awesome. Just not the same horse this year. I can't really have him. I'm a fairly strong supporter of Rally Cry, number four, who won't be 9-2. I can't imagine. This race has been a target for a long time. He's run well fresh before. His Woodward was excellent. He's got several top races that I think would beat the other horse that's, I think, one of the top two choices, War Story here. I would definitely prefer Rally Cry to War Story. I don't mind the layoff at all. Pletcher's won this race twice and thinks that this horse is going to suit the bull ring there. He's got tactical speed. He's handy. And he's trained. It looks like he's trained well, and Pletcher says he trained well. So that's enough for me. I think underneath, you know, I'm trying to maybe avoid War Story a little, so Diamond King would be one I'll consider, number three, and the non-Something Awesome Jose Corral's trained horse Unbridled One has got kind of a tough draw on the outside, but he's going to drop back to some extent for some position anyway. He'll be a price. He could run second, I suppose, and really boost the exotics.
Charlestown Classic goes as the 11th tomorrow, 5:37, the afternoon card. And, of course, this whole card cut its teeth as a night feature. And,
yeah.
And the move to the afternoons. You got the $200,000 races. Quick thought, Marcus, the Hilton, the Dance to Bristol. I saw you wrote the advance.
Yes. Well, I like two of Joe Sharp's horses in this race. In the Hilton, I like Malpais. Who I think is going to be able to get the 7/8 half. He turned for the short stretch, even though he couldn't go a mile on the 16th. And in the Russell Road, he's got Cool Arrow, who won that Hilton race last year and had a very solid comeback run at Oakland. I think both of those horses are well met. And in the Dance to Bristol, he's got this, the absolute local star, like Pontchartrain, the Oaky Bread, who has just completely dominated. She's won so many races at Charlestown, won this race last year, won the prep for this race easily, and might even be a bettable price with a couple names as two in there, and Navarro has won. So maybe that horse is as higher than she should be, even though she's got, when you get these bull ring tracks and you get a horse that loves them, it's a huge home field advantage, bigger than like the typical home field advantage, if you ask me.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody, DRF Hirsch, of course, and Marcus covering Charlestown's big card tomorrow. And Marcus, I had Wesley Ward the other day, and I was speculating who might write the Royal Ascot Invader piece, and I thought you might be a candidate. It seems like he's bringing a plane load, maybe two plane loads.
I typically talk to Wesley coming up here pretty soon. It'll be a little long before he fully gets things organized, but it's that time of year. you know that this whole operation, to some extent, is geared around this trip. And
yep.
From what we've seen so far at Keeneland, it's business as usual for Wesley. He's got a bunch of precocious, really fast horses. And he will expect to win at least one race at the Royal Meeting at Ascot in late June.
Absolutely. And we'll look forward to that after we get through the Triple Crown season and much, much more. Marcus, I appreciate the visit.
No problem, Steve. Thank you.
DRF Hirsch, everybody, to close out a busy full 3 hours. HRN coverage 3 o'clock today, and then tomorrow, of course, Saturday morning talk opportunities at Equine Forum early, and then down the stretch with Bill Finley and Dave Johnson. We will head shortly to Kentucky, and I don't even know. This has got to be year 13. 13, I think. Coming to you from Churchill, live on Monday. Good luck this weekend, everybody. Want to thank Joanne and taking care of Case, and to hope they and everyone have a very happy Easter and a good Pesach as well. Happy Passover, everybody. Talk to you Monday from the Downs.